over. Pull over. I'm going to read him his rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be held against you in the court of law. You have the right to an attorney.
Welcome to Walking the BJJ Gauntlet, a jiu-jitsu-centric podcast that attempts, with varying success, to unravel the mysteries of the grappling game. Today's guest is Craig Jones, a boy with corn-coloured hair who likes possums and twilight and pretzels. The Dylan Mulvaney of grappling, it said. With the contented and dreamy look of the female suckling her young, Jones has dominated some of the best jiu-jitsu athletes in the world, including Tai Ruotolo, Louis Panza, and Nicholas Mirigali, although not SJJ's own Charles Negromonte. Lately, Jones has entered the night thoughts of women, some boys, and innumerable non-binary sex pots worldwide with his mastery of reality television via his B-Team YouTube channel. However, his greatest success must be his role as grappling coach for UFC fighter Alexander Volkanovski, still the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and who gave hell to Islam Makhachev in their all-time duel for the lightweight title. Now, the first thing you ask Craig, who's in Australia for his round of Sambo's for Sissy seminars, is to explain his theorem, because isn't the prevailing wisdom, if Sambo is easy, it'd be called jiu-jitsu?
We already proved it, right? Islam basically got out-grappled, I would say so. From the perspective of what was expected, everyone thought it was going to get killed. So I think he really, really proved how close the grappling exchanges were.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because everyone thought Volkanovski would get taken down 30 seconds and submit it. So what did you guys work on in camp?
I mean, a lot of fence wrestling, a lot of getting back to the feet, a lot of specific submissions from Sambo. The thing is, Khabib's really good at holding people down. Islam's good at holding people down. Best people in the world are holding people down are folk-style wrestlers. And Russia doesn't do folk-style, only America does. So although their specific combination of wrestling and judo is excellent, they still use jiu-jitsu after that. And I didn't think jiu-jitsu is the best art to hold people down. Jiu-jitsu is an art that's good that holds people down because people don't try to get back up. If people try to get back up, jiu-jitsu generally doesn't work very well. Most of the things they teach you are going to result in you falling off the top. So in that sense, you can be pretty confident that just because they're Russian doesn't mean they're good at holding people down.
Do you think that's why the wrestling, a lot of the no-gi game is going to wrestling up now? Like it's actually transitioning a lot from...
I think so. And I think the best part of grappling is the scramble followed by the submission.
Mm.
If it was the submission, 10th Planet guys would be the most exciting grappers in the world, but they're not. We want to see a scramble that ultimately leads to a submission. We don't just want to see a submission.
But how do they, when you say 10th Planet, why are they not being able to hold people down? What's changed?
Because they train in gyms that don't practice getting back up. That's the problem. Most jiu-jitsu guys can train for 10 years. If they've never rolled with a wrestler or an MMA guy, they don't know that they don't know how to hold people down.
But do you think that it's like the UFC, why it's all standing up so much now is because people can get up easier. They're taught to get up, whereas particularly in a gi, it's a lot harder to get up, right?
Yeah.
And I think the same with the cage. You can use the cage to get up. That's why, that's my theory. It's all come to be mainly striking because with a good underhook and whatever, you can always get up in no gi, and it's particularly slippery. It's very hard to hold anyone down, right? Do you agree with that, or sort of if you...
Yeah. I think that obviously the fence is a valuable tool to getting back up. MMA, once upon a time, like Tito Ortiz early days, would drag people to the fence because they thought it was harder to get up. But obviously, with the advent of wall wrestling, wall walks, and stuff like that, it's actually easier to get up from the fence. It's almost MMA guys are better at getting up there than in open space. Like, obviously, a lot of the exchanges, you'll see the folks on the ground, he's going to scoot to the wall to get back up. I just don't think jiu-jitsu gives you the skills to win grappling exchanges in MMA. I think the worst thing you can do if you're a high-level MMA guy and you want to get better at grappling for MMA is hire a jiu-jitsu coach. You don't need a jiu-jitsu coach. You need folk-style wrestlers, and you need, if you're facing a pure jiu-jitsu guy, you need someone that knows submission defense. And again, even a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu coaches don't even work bad positions or deep submissions, so they honestly have no idea how to get out of those positions. Because again, most people, you don't want to get submitted by your training partners at lower levels, so they just neglect those areas of the game. And again, that's why a lot of MMA guys don't respect jiu-jitsu guys, because they train with them and get up, they're like, oh, this guy doesn't know how to hold me down.
Yeah. Yeah. So for the uninitiated, folk style wrestling is it the same as catch wrestling? Is that sort of...
Now, folk style is like, it's a form of wrestling they only do in America. It's like collegiate wrestling, but it's like a system. The scramble continues on the ground. It stays on the ground. Freestyle will cut it.
Because it's 3 seconds on your back type scenario?
Well, yeah. You could obviously get a pin, but in freestyle, if things stop for a second, the ref will be like, back to the feet. You know what I mean? Where folk style, you actually actively try to get back up. That guy's going to try to get you down and potentially pin you in the process.
Right. Okay, I didn't know that. That's a good sort of break to why that's happening and where it's going.
So in the fight with Volk and Makachev, how far into the fight were you just going, fuck, this shit's working, it's doing okay? Or were you really confident going into it?
I mean, I believe in Volks, but no matter how much you believe in someone, there's always the back of your mind that potentially it could go the other way. You know what I mean? But again, anywhere there's a mystery, there's a bit of fear, you know, because those guys are so isolated. Yeah. They travel, they don't train with anyone else. They don't bring anyone else in. We don't know anything about what they do. It's a mystery. You know what I mean? When it's a mystery and those guys have very successful fighting records, you do imagine that they're doing something other people aren't known. But there's really nowhere in the world people are doing something that we can't learn elsewhere. Mm. It's out there. If you've done it in a fight, if you've done it in a match, it can be replicated.
Yeah. And I thought that watching that match that, you know, obviously his wrestling's improved massively to go as well as he did. But I just thought it was more, it was his gas. Mate, he didn't look as tired, you know, Volks, particularly when he had his back and he was defending every choke. And you can only do that when you're fit, because you know yourself, mate, when you're tired and someone's going at you, you've got nothing left, you're going to give your neck. And I thought that's when the decision wasn't in the bag for me then, you know.
I
just thought his level of wind is unbelievable, like comparatively to a lot of guys. Like, he just, another round and he would have won that easily.
He never panics. So like, if you, most people go into a fight with Islam or Khabib and they say, if he takes me down, it's over. But if you say, oh, he takes me down, I'll get up, that's the right mindset to have, you know. You get tired when you panic. So if he's not scared, then he does. Gas tank's going to be pretty good, because panic is where you make bad decisions, overexert yourself.
And I think that's, you know, because I've spoken to you about this before. I met you in Melbourne a few years ago, and I asked you about your competing and whether you got nervous, and you said, I don't get nervous. And I, to be honest, I get nervous as shit. I can't concentrate. That is a skill, not skill, a blessing in itself, to be able to go in there with such a focused mind, know you've got a game plan, and be able to carry it out. How do you respond to that?
I still get a little nervous. You've either done the training or not. Do you believe in your preparation? If you believe in your preparation, you should reassure yourself of that. But if you don't believe in your preparation, if you have doubts about how you trained or your coaches, that's going to follow you into.
So, in saying that, like when you fought the ADCC and got beat, were you nervous before that fight?
Was I nervous before? No, usually in a tournament, I'm only nervous before the first one.
Yeah, right.
Or if it's a very specific opponent, you know what I mean? If it's like a high pressure based on the relationship you have with that guy. I don't want to lose to that.
Yeah, right.
No one wants to lose first round.
No, that's right.
Certain people, no one wants to lose to.
Yeah. Was that like the Ruotolo fight? Was that one of those high pressure fights?
Oh, not so much the Ruotolo. The Ruotolo one wasn't. He's just, when you're that young, you just don't get tired. So it's like you obviously trying to hold a guy down, and you fatigue yourself trying to hold a guy down. But really, Ruotolo wasn't too a high pressure one. You know what I mean? More, I mean, Merigali is a high pressure one.
That's what I was thinking about. Well, because mainly the reason I say that about why you might be feeling that is because when you're expected to win, and Merigali, although he's an amazing Gi competitor, and obviously the best, one of the best, he's not a no-Gi guy. So for the result he got was pretty amazing in the short preparation he had. You know, he's obviously a tried and true athlete, to say the least. But so you were nervous before that one?
Yeah, I mean, when we left Anaheim, everyone just is like, oh, if you lose, like, you shouldn't have left Anaheim. You know what I mean? So it's like, you got that in the back of your mind as well. And obviously, we have a terrible relationship with that group of people. You know what I mean? So it's like, obviously, you don't want to lose. Don't want to lose to those guys.
And you know, like, that's a nice segue into that.
So what about the split? What happened? I mean, you know, explained it a million times, but...
Oh, yeah. I can't really talk about the personal details, you know, but it's definitely, obviously... There's some people on that team I don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm fine with. But there's a large amount of absolute hate.
Did it come down to a flashpoint, though, or was it just a growing thing?
Was there a flashpoint? I mean, not really.
Was there a straw that broke the camel's back?
It was inevitable. It was inevitable.
And then, like, I remember when you first went over to New York and you were training there with those guys and you got the knife. And if you don't know what the knife is...
Yeah, what's the knife?
Denner gives out a big hunting knife to everybody who... I don't know why he gives it. What's the symbolism behind it?
Sharpening
the weapon, but why does he give it to you? For what reason? Is it because
you achieve performance? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
good performance, you get a knife.
Yeah, right. Okay, one good role or like one well, good comp, one comp good result,
comp performance. Yeah, something that sort of stands out. He'll give you a knife.
Yeah, right. But not in your back.
Nah, yeah. He pulls it out of somewhere else.
Again,
I always thought he gives out the knife so that if there's a murder, so if his weapon's found in a crime scene, he's got a reason for fingerprints being on it.
That's a fair call. Very, very fair call. And so you were there for like 6 months at least, were you?
Probably total training time with those crew, over two years, I would say.
Yeah, right. And over that time, things were fracturing through that, and we don't need to know specifics. So we would love to know. We don't want to put that sort of pressure on you.
I mean, people
it doesn't feel pressure. Just said,
like, say for example, there's people you could train with every day. And yeah, by definition, they are your friends. But are they your friend if all you do is train with them every day? You know what I mean? I think sometimes the lines get blurred in gyms where people think you're closer than you are. You train every day.
You see them every
day. You've got friends that you would invite into your house, hang out, and spend time with. And then you've got... Basically, a training partner is like a work colleague. Obviously, some people you work with, you're going to become very close with. But just because you work with them doesn't mean you're super close friends. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think...
Because you're north south with them every day.
Yeah.
Because
you're embarrassing to walk outside of the park.
No, and that's a very good distinction, actually, because, you know, like, we all know that because we all do it and we all train every day and we all have that distinction in the gym. You don't always get them. And there's not many people that you don't like in your gym, or you go somewhere else, right? But, which is obviously what you guys did. But again, and that's a very valid point. You know, how many people are going to invite to your wedding from your gym? And then that's a sore point, because when you do get married, you got to leave half your people you see every day out, more, you know?
Yeah, most jiu-jitsu people you wouldn't want to spend time with anyway.
Yeah, that's right. No, but I think that, but back on the Danaher scenario and the bro, so then you decided, right, this is, so obviously the group that we're getting on decided or started to speak about where they're going to move to, and obviously COVID was a...
Well, I was always going to leave. Like, I even, Danaher knew this. I had always spoken to him saying, this will be, I'll stay with you, I'll do one more ADCC with you. So that was meant to be ADCC 2022, and theoretically it was meant to be ADCC, 2021.
Yeah,
but because it got bumped a year, obviously we broke up before then, but he knew I was going to leave the team. I'd already told him.
And was this a really honest chat about their culture, his training techniques, the values of the members of the team? Were you that honest?
Oh, well, I mean, I just never, like, I mean, I don't want to name names per se, but you know exactly who I am. I don't want to be just training as a human being until I'm 40 years old. You know, like, I kind of think that's a bit sad. You know what I mean? Like, that's all you've done your entire life. I'd rather try some different things, you know, that opening up the door for coaching MMA guys because there's less pressure on your own training and stuff. So I'd never dreamed that I'd be in the bloody blue basement for another 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, some people, like Gordon used to say to me all the time that he's going to compete till he's 40. And again, like, I don't want to judge him for having that in him. That's fine. But, like, that's not...
I don't want to do anything worse.
It's a pretty unpleasant lifestyle, you know? People see the glory of it on Instagram, but fuck, it's a hard life.
Of course, mate. And I don't think everybody realises that the grind is the grind. It's, if you're training to actually be any good, you have to grind, which means, I don't train when I want. Like, I don't train every day, and these guys have to train when they don't want to do it, and they don't feel like, and you're sore as park most of the time.
It's pretty rough. Yeah. Rough on the body.
Yeah, 100%, you know, and like, and it's not just that you're tired, you're fatigued, you play, and then you go to one big comp, and then you got to compete, and then there's another Polaris event in 2 weeks that you've got to go into, and you can't drop the ball.
You might eventually, when you lose, the whole world laughs at you, and sometimes you think, fuck, I'd like to be on the other side occasionally, you know, laughing at the competitors. Enjoying the other side, man.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now, it's an interest. So what made you settle on Dallas? Was that because of the loose COVID restrictions? Or was it because there's a lot of jiu-jitsu competitors down there?
Obviously.
Or it's closer to Mexican karate people.
Closer to Mexicans might be, right? But, I mean, obviously, California's pretty cool. California's an expensive place to live. It would be handy living in, obviously, L.A. to travel international and stuff. Living in New York's another place that's like romanticized. When you actually live there, unless you're fucking making $5 million a year, living in a beautiful neighborhood, beautiful apartment, it's pretty terrible.
Is it?
You know, New York's a place like San Fran, like LA. I mean, people do it with Sydney and Melbourne, like young people leave their city almost just to say they live there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like add some value, but like, oh, I lived in New York, you know what I mean? Like, but it's actually reality. It's not a great place to live unless you're balling out, you know? I lived in terrible apartments in New York. So, like, Texas was a more reasonable, and it was a central location. When I'm in New York, I used to compete for Submission Underground in Portland. That's a 5-hour flight. I'd rather be somewhere in the middle, quick 2-3 hours this way, 2-3 hours that way. You know?
Plus, I know the weather's cold over there in winter because I thought it was hot all the time. I was talking to Jeremy about it, and he said, mate, it's freezing. So I bought him a jumper when he went away just to say thank you for helping us at the gym. But me thinking, you know, that's why you train, it's hot all the time, it's blah, 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 it's not, right? So.
Oh, well, I mean, it's like the summer there's over 40 degrees for probably 3 months straight. So the summer's brutal, and the winter, it'll have a cold pocket, but the next week could be back over 20.
Yeah, right.
So it might snow this week.
Yeah, right.
It'll be 25 next, so it's
Yeah, right.
And it never used to snow, because that's only a recent sort of thing.
Yeah, right. So I remember back in, I think it was the early, maybe 2007-ish, where you guys were from Adelaide and you were training, was it earlier than that?
2007?
Yeah, like ISO
Health, yeah.
Is that then, around about that time? Because
I reckon I would have started either 2006, 2007.
Yeah, so because I remember being in the comps and I don't know whether I was competing that time, but I just remember these guys from this side, and mate, they wiped the floor with everybody they competed with at the Abu Dhabi trials. It was the Gi. I'm pretty sure you were in Gi at the time.
You know what? That would have been later. I think I started 2006, 2007. I first competed 2009, and then Abu Dhabi trials was honestly, I probably didn't start getting into that till 2013, 2014, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, obviously, my calendar's off is skewed, but I remember you guys coming up, and I didn't know who you were at the time. I just saw you wiping the floor with everybody, and I'm going, and it was ISO Health, which wasn't a brand, it wasn't a well-known jiu-jitsu culture, and they came from nowhere, like obscurity from Adelaide, of all places, which is where Craig was born, right? So we were just going, who the fuck are these guys, you know? And next thing you know, and I think it was your uncle, wasn't it? Or your cousin?
My cousin Matt, yeah.
So where did he learn his jiu-jitsu? Is he good? How did he give it to you? How did he teach you guys that he's so good? Because there's a few of you, wasn't there? There's a whole team that went well.
I'm trying to think, that's fucking a long time ago. Specifically, probably it was me and Lachlan Warren that were getting really good competition results. That would be like my main training partner there.
Yeah.
And so there were some other guys that were winning at the time, but fuck, I can't remember some of their names. So there were some guys that were winning good, like white blue belt tournaments, and obviously just got a career, chilled out a bit. Matt, in terms of where he learns, fuck. Matt got a belt from a different coach every time, I believe. He maybe got a brown and black from the same guy, but he would go to different spots to get belt. Ultimately, get his black belt.
Well, that was heavily looked down upon in that day.
At that time, yeah.
You know, like if you left one black, you were just a dead set.
Creonte.
Oh, no, Creonte. You know, you were shit.
The problem was, though, it's like if you open a gym and you're not a black belt, now a crafty man can extort you. They'll be like, hey, another seminar. you maybe get your belt next time, another seminar, you know, like, so you get sort of extorted, so you could be held hostage for a while.
They're listening to Troy. You get it.
It's a good business model.
So with your seminars, Sound Versus Fake, what did people come out of it learning? Because I missed the cutoff. I missed the seminar.
All right. We did a couple of crucifix escapes, just showing crucifix a fake position. And then we did a couple of, I really basically stole them from Folkstyle Wrestling, a hip sit to escape a turtle back control.
Yeah.
Is that what's on the new video that dropped yesterday? You and Lachlan Rowley?
I want to use some of the techniques.
Yeah, I saw that. Crucifix escape.
Yeah, right. And obviously you have no plans on visiting Russia or anything like that, because they'll kill you. They'll literally kill you. You can't say Sivo's fake.
It's fake. You know what I mean?
Oh, fuck, mate. You're talking like, you know, the most nasty mafiosos over there you can probably get.
Well, they're going through a difficult time right now, so they're probably the humour.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. You know, like, they're probably not going to laugh at it, you know.
But you and his lover seem to get on pretty good.
Yeah, he got it. He got the jokes, you know. Like, it's like, most of the time, I make fun of myself in the process. And I think that lightens the attack of it, you know what I mean? But if you just shit on something, then it's going to come across much more offensive.
Like Colby?
Colby, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, Dylan as well. Dylan went real personal with him, so it's like, that's why Khabib attacked him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really want to go too personal. I just want to make fun of it lightly.
Do you think that, Islam's camp is watching your embedded videos and just going, fucking hell, they're just having fun and going swimming with sharks?
They must have, because they...
Do you see them, John?
No.
So the embedded videos have just had Craig and Joseph Chan and Volga stuff just going swimming in their undies with sharks and having a hell time. And I was laughing and stuff, and I thought, maybe just watching and go, this is going to be so easy.
Yeah, hopefully. I hope they're watching. I mean, they knew of me afterwards, so I assume that they must have seen something, you know? If anything, the open workout, because I got Volks, Budskins, Oarsman, I said the greatest fear of any wrestler.
For what?
So I think, that's hard to be angry at, you know what I mean?
Was that a deliberate thing to make him think about footlocks?
I mean, lightly, those guys are generally pretty scared of heel hooks. A lot of MMA fighters generally are scared of heel hooks. Even though they're fucking punching each other in the head, they're scared of leg locks. And a lot of wrestlers are scared of leg locks. A lot of those tournaments over there sometimes would ban heel hooks. They still think it's too dangerous.
Do you think that, with Nogi and a lot of comps still, I mean, there's not as many heel hooks as there was, right? Let's be honest. Everyone's sort of particularly escaping the saddle, but I'm saying, like, it's harder for most people, except maybe you, to set them up. So it's sort of evolving away from that a little bit too. Like, you know, and I'm surprised you didn't teach a leg lock in your seminar. How are you feeling about the future of... Obviously, they're going to be there because you and Lockie brought it really out of the cold, to be honest with you.
Well, it's actually funny we talk about this. When I had 2017 and I, like, popped low in the heel hook... and then I had the EDI run where I heel hooked like three guys real quick. Basically, I was like, fuck, people aren't even going to ask me to teach heel hooks for the rest of my life. So then in 2019, when Lucky had his heel hook run, I said to him after, I was like, enjoy teaching heel hooks for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 100%.
And that's it. He has to teach it all the time now.
Like, but did you, like, what do they call it, the reverse... 50-50, backside
50-50. Yeah.
Did you know that move before Lachlan did it? Had you worked with that with him before? Because that sort of...
I mean, not specifically as it's taught there, but I mean, when you look at a move, it's a reconstruction of other moves.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you look, you would have seen the Meow brothers use backside entries just to secure 50-50, not to go for leg locks, but when they wanted to be
in 50-50. Yeah.
So it's definitely, I mean, it's basically, you got the old school knee bar. Basically from there, you know, you'd see, McKenzie hit that in the UFC, basically a K-guard knee bar. That's under that shoulder. Yeah, exactly.
Things
like that have existed. So what Giles did so well was take pre-existing things and combine them. So obviously, if you aren't familiar with the initial ones, you would look at that like it's from another planet. But oftentimes you see it and you're like, all right, I've seen how they've adapted an old move to add in a new submission.
Yeah, and I think that's what Lachlan does so well. He's got such a library of moves in his repertoire, and he pins them together and he creates Frankenstein's monster out of it, and which he did on that comp and pulled it out and beat two heavyweights unbelievable entries, set up perfectly, and then never been seen. And then basically from that, that would become a go-to for a lot of guys now, really, isn't it? You know? It's incredible. But so do you think that there's going to be a time when, which seems to be happening now,
yeah, they're not a big deal.
It's not a big deal. You know, like, you know when you get set up, you kick out early, like, you could feel it sort of a lot of the time. And guys are very aware of it. So you guys had such an advantage for so long knowing that stuff when no one else knew it, right? Did you feel that?
Oh, for sure, yeah. It was super easy.
Because
yeah.
You'd be boot scooting and butt scooting.
Tell us 15.
Under people and just trying to pull their legs in and just... And they had never had a chance. And then what about that bloke's leg you ripped off?
Vinny's leg, yeah.
That was horrible.
It's funny as well, you bring up Lachlan with heel hooks. It's funny, going into 2019 ADCC, I had dialed back from them. Because the problem with it also is, the more someone's scared of your heel hooks, just the harder they are to get. Because any grip you make, they back out.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, the heel hooks worked the best. So they worked the best for me in 2017. Because no one knew who I was, and they therefore had no respect. They were like, I'm just going to pass this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 100%.
And to a certain degree, that's what they did for Lachlan at 2019.
Yeah.
Like, three guys in a row were like, fuck this little guy. Who is this guy?
Plus, he'd just been... Now, Lachie just been beaten by Gordon, so he was beatable, right? And I'm not saying...
Oh, he beat my Leprey in his division, yeah.
Yeah, our Leprey, sorry. Yeah.
Ultimately, Gordon in the absolute. But yeah, I mean, that's all you need. It's way easier to get a heel hook if someone thinks you're shit.
That's right, exactly. Like, contemptible. Like, you know, like, you tread with contempt, you're going to fucking...
And Conan was the most adaptable of those three guys, but unfortunately, he got heel hooked first.
Mm.
And in terms of adaptability, I mean, like... The other two guys, like, if Kynan watched Lachlan hit that on one of those guys first, he would have changed his entire game to be so respectful of the guard, likely forced an overtime and tried to wrestle to win. Whereas because Kynan got first, the other two guys were like, oh, what are we going to do? Just do the same game.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, 100%.
So oftentimes the best guys are the guys that can recognize how they need to change based on what they've just seen.
Yeah, 100%. No, it's and the beauty of the sport is it's just evolving, and it's just crazy. You wouldn't think there's any more sort of stuff you can keep coming up with, but people keep bringing, you know. I remember
there's always another seminar around the corner, isn't there?
There's always, mate. You can always milk that cow.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, like, when the Berimbolo came out, I was just going, what the fuck? How did they make that shit up? Like, where the hell would you come up with that? Like, seriously. And it's just like, and the Meows were big on it early days. I remember that. They were... two brothers with nothing else to do, let's be honest. And the twins, anyone with a twin is going to be a heaps better chance.
It's going to be tough, yeah.
Aren't they, you know? Like, so transitioning back again, I want to ask about Lachie. One of the nicest blokes in jiu-jitsu.
For sure, yeah.
A gentleman, like, you know, you go into his gym, there's no ego with him at all. He's just the nicest bloke you ever meet. I find that with a lot of jiu-jitsu guys. Like, there's not many dickheads. I think that sport in itself humbles you. Like, you realise you're only as good as you... And the other thing too, mate, you only don't have to be unfit and you'll get tapped out. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, if you... And it does become such a sport of gas, not just techno. You know what I mean? I think that's a massive thing with the UFC. You obviously got to be a tough dude. You got to be able to fight. But if you're not super, super fit, you're going to get fucking pumped. Do you agree?
Well, I agree, but it's interesting because, like, say, for example, like a guy like Gordon, he's never doing conditioning. You know what I mean?
He's never doing conditioning.
But his gas tank works so well because he never overexerts himself technically. And also, he never comes across an opponent that can make him overexert himself technically. So if you are the best... You don't need to do conditioning.
Okay, but I'm going to be a little bit devil's advocate here. What if you took any sort of performance enhancing drugs? Do you think they would help your gas?
Gas? I mean, yeah, obviously there would be something you could take, like, I guess, EPO or something like that.
But what about even steroids? Don't they apparently make you gas not as... I don't know, really. And particularly if you're strong, you don't get in bad position anyway, so you're not chasing your tail.
I've noticed a counter to it, because I've noticed a lot of people that... I see them go on, and now they suddenly, like, I'm a powerful guy, and they overuse that newfound strength and end up gassing themselves.
Yeah, right.
You know, suddenly it's like a guy that was weak's like, yes, I can just crush guys now. And then
But I think it is, and do you think, like, you know, there's been a fair bit of controversy, particularly recently, Cyborg and a few others getting sprung.
He's always in the controversy.
Well, yeah, for, and, you know, particularly on his gym and the issues there, but, you know, like, what's the future for, you know, do you think they should clean up? I think they should. I mean, it's not fair if I'm rolling with someone on the roids.
Who's going to pay for it?
Pay for what, the testing?
That's the question, right? The only true test, random testing, that's fucking expensive. I mean, even Lachlan's doing the $100,000 giveaway, and he's paying for the guys to do testing, and I think that comes like $1,000 a head.
Oh, so the guys who are gonna who are going for that $100,000, they have to be tested.
Yeah,
that's good.
But the problem is obviously, like, if it's $1,000 a test, and the only way to do it is to randomized
test. Well, I think the only real way to clean up the sport is to get it in the Olympics, and then that way the IOC runs the testing campaigns. It's done. I'm not sure on how regularly it's done, but I'm fairly sure it's a lot more thorough than what's going on right now.
Are they working on a way to put steroids in tablet form yet for the people who don't like needles?
Oh, I would imagine so.
You could get a suppository.
Oh, really?
Sure. Yeah, you like that,
I like that, yeah. A good year supply. Depends.
A barrel, big it is.
Yeah, it depends how big, yeah. Get a year supply in one hit, huh?
Yeah, 100%. And so, you know, like I see a lot of your Instagrams and it's pretty funny. So your personal brand's pretty lighthearted. You're a serious competitor. Now, I'm really going to get to the crux of what everyone really wants to know here.
Gabby Garcia.
What is the relationship there? How did it start? Was it a one-nighter? you know, were you drunk at a club? What happened?
It'd take you a full night to climb inside, you know? So it's going to be a bit of time to get out of there too, you know?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I can only assume that. But and how she, does she ever DM you back?
She loves the banter. But the problem is, so she's happy.
She's happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'd be like, if you were doing this and she was hating it, which I haven't seen, you know, it probably might be called misogyny. I don't know. Like, yeah. It just depends on.
But yeah, I mean, here's the thing: in the social media world, I can make a joke about Gabby and Gabby liking to make a joke about me, and other people can be offended based on what we say to each other.
But that's the whole, like, what's the culture, you know, the woke culture, right, is so much about defending other people, and it's fucking doesn't have nothing to do with you, right?
I believe you can dance around it, though, so it's like, you can use controversial things. All right, so if I say Gabby Garcia is hot, and someone says, oh, you're making fun of her, then that person's actually insulting her, because I could be honest. You see what I mean?
Yeah, she has a lovely stomach. There's a disparity between potentially what people perceive you'd be able to get.
Yeah.
And physically.
The pussy he can get.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think that's the joke.
Yeah.
Is the disparity. It's not the Craig, really. Because, you know, I mean, like, not many people. There's some weird guys that like feeders, and they call them feeders, and I'm sure Craig's not a feeder. You know, like, are you?
A few, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But you can actually, you know what I mean? That's the, like, say, for example, I made a video recently with Ladyboys. I'm not making fun of Ladyboys. I'm making fun of myself hanging out with Ladyboys. I'm the joke, they're not the joke. That's how you dance around it, I think. There's an art to making sure that it's, you stay on the line, you don't cross it, and then only stupid people get offended because they don't actually understand.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's what comedy is, right? It's being edgy. And knowing you, like, you can't go in, and look, you can tell jokes, about anything, as long as the audience fucking takes it in the right vein, right? It's because a lot of derogatory humour, which we all see in stereotypes and that sort of humour, is fucking funny. And it's sad that sort of shit you can't say it anymore, because it's got too sensitive. You know, everybody's too, and I'm the worst. Ask Troy, right?
I honestly don't believe in it. The cancel culture. I think you can get away with anything if you do it the right way. Have you ever heard of the podcast Come Down?
Come Down or Come Town? Town? No.
Is that Come with a U?
Come with a U, yeah. C-U-M.
D-O-W-N. If you guys look up that, that podcast on Patreon, that was making $200,000 a month. And they're straight up doing African impersonations, Indian impersonations, making some of the wildest jokes you could ever imagine, yet it was untouchable.
So absolutely.
I think you can do it. You can do it. There's just a way to do it, you know?
So, but Chris Lilly, he got cancelled, didn't he? Well, he's not allowed to do that.
They cancelled.
And Troy, were you offended by, what was that character he did? The
Jonah.
Troy's married. Like, you know, you did you come? You're the one that got pulled off.
I loved it.
Oh, right. Sweet.
But you're, the one you did on the fans only, where you ordered her on
fans
mate,
only
fans.
Yeah, yeah.
We all, mate, that was the best.
And what is the OnlyFans? Because I saw that you had a T-shirt on with OnlyFans probably before OnlyFans came out, and probably travelling you get lonely. So is that how you found it? And then
that apparel's everywhere.
That's
was everywhere. You, that.
That's probably the most one of the most successful things we ever launched. Yeah, I mainly made an OnlyFans so that they wouldn't sue me because I thought a loophole would be if I use their logo but I'm on their website. I'm just advertising my account on their
but
website.
But what was the joke? The OnlyFans was like, were you did you teaching jiu-jitsu on OnlyFans or what's
anything
the
if the price was right? But the main seller. The main seller was me just messaging people's training partners and abusing them from my Instagram account.
People's training partners.
So they'd be like at a gym and they'd wake up and there'd be a video message from me being like, your whole gym hates you, you're junk, you're never going to get your purple belt, you know.
How much did that cost?
That was 50, but it got so much we had to put up to 100 because I couldn't keep up.
Oh, that's so you people hired you to bag their mates.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
That was a fun. That was a
yeah,
fun.
But were they legitimately their friends or people they just trained with? You cleared that up. You didn't care. You
don't
just,
care.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. That's not bad.
That's good.
That's not bad. You know those that you have the birthday ones and you get you ever
the cameos.
Your cameos. You ever had to do that?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of that basically. You know what I mean? Like.
And how many were you doing? How many were you doing? Like, you still do it?
No, I don't do it anymore.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I did dope. Hundreds of them, I reckon. Yeah.
Really? Fuck! I wish I would have known.
Pretty good.
I'm surprised people didn't do that to me. People would love to do that to me.
It would have been good.
I would say anything. Yeah.
So Craig, you use a lot of gay terminology in your things, like power tops and power bottoms, and people who aren't into the lifestyle probably aren't aware that they're. Ways of making love and so on. So what excites you about
can
the lifestyle?
Educate us on that because I'm.
Well, I think Craig.
Jiu-jitsu is pretty gay. You know what I mean? It's pretty gay. So everyone was afraid. A lot of guys that when they start jiu-jitsu, they're worried it'll look gay. So I just try to make it a little more gay because I know it makes them uncomfortable. And Brazilians are very homophobic.
Oh yeah, man.
So I love to. The Brazilians are good to stir up sometimes. Because a lot of the time, the sarcasm's lost, and they get very angry. Recently, I was trolling Mika Galvão, because he failed the drug test, and he was saying, he's a 19-year-old vegan that's jacked that had low testosterone. I'm like, if you're jacked, there's one thing you don't have, and that's low testosterone.
Yeah, yeah, you know right. I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his dad messaged me. He's like, you idiot motherfucker.
Yeah, well, like, that's his dad's his coach, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just don't get the lack of humor there. That's a funny situation.
But you're lucky because you've got your knife.
I've got guns in America, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another good segue here because I'm really interested in this.
Because John's a big fan of Alex Jones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is he your uncle?
I wish.
Okay, do you wish? Because, you know, and this is a serious, I want to ask this question. There's a lot of controversy around him, right? And from conspiracy theories to Sandy Hook, which I'm sure you know about. You know, and he recently, I think he's getting sued for $1 billion. Right? I think
he got sued, yeah.
Got sued for close $800 million.
Yeah, I think he's negotiating you can negotiate that, yeah.
Okay. So, and you posted a lot of stuff with him, and a lot of people hate that bloke, right? How do you feel about that? I know I'm not trying to get into a political answer, but I'd sort of morally, do you think there's a moral question there with him? Because, you know, let's face it, there was parents in Sandy Hook who kids were murdered, who were abused by conspiracy theorists, people who listened to Alex Jones, you know, people spitting on their graves and desecrating kids' graves all because of this guy. Horrible stuff, and he made a lot of money out of that sort of stuff. And I'm not saying just that one issue, but that's been his modus operandi, stirring shit up. How did you meet him? How did you go? I saw you go shooting with him once.
Yeah.
Tell us about that relationship, how that spawned, and where is that?
Well, I had a I had a reaction to the COVID vaccine where my stomach like swelled up. I had to pull out of a match. And Alex Jones spoke about it on his show. And our video editor, because Alex is an Austin guy as well, our video editor happened to know a guy from InfoWars. And he was like, hey, you want to go on InfoWars? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. I'll meet him, you know? So we head to the InfoWars compound, hang out with him, and he's fucking probably the most charismatic guy I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah, like, you just wouldn't believe it, eh? So that happened, and then we got him to come to a couple matches. I mean, the guy's a bit of a caricature, you know, like even at the WNO tournament, he started a chant about Biden, you know what I mean? And he's like in the crowd, you see all the producers like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and then we went shooting. I haven't linked up with him. It's funny because I went shooting with him, was asking him all these gun recommendations.
You asked him?
Yeah, because we were shooting, like he had a ton of weapons there. And then it came out that his phone was seized. His lawyer accidentally sent his entire contents of his phone. And then that ended up going to Congress.
That's
so I was
right.
Like, fuck, I'm on a list for sure now. Asking this gunt about his
guns.
Weapons, yeah.
He's got tankers though, doesn't he?
He's got an armored vehicle that he goes to protest with. It's basically...
But the thing about a lot of these really controversial people is they don't get the notoriety unless they have that personality. Like, it's crazy, like Trump, you know, like you can go on with these like really sort of like multi-dimensional people, and there's always a good side, some, you know, and they actually are amazing. Like, you just go, I can understand what you're saying, you know, like it just amazes me. Okay, and that answered the question. So tell us more about the American culture, what you like about it, what you don't like about it. How's all the? Because for all the Aussies here, we only see what we see on the news. How is America? Is it split down the middle? Everyone hate each other?
I mean, it's pretty similar to Australia. The one thing that bothers me with the Aussies sometimes, right, is like, oh, I mean, first of all, Americans sing on Australian, Australians sing on American now. God, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Aussies
yeah.
will be like, oh, you said grocery store, fuck you, asshole, you know what I mean? But like, the funny thing is, like, Aussies will shit on Americans all the time. They'll be like, these dumb guys, stuff like this, about fucking Americans never travel. But they don't ever look at it from the other side, that for the most part, they get no vacation time, the schooling shit, they make no money. So it's like kind of shitting on people that it's not, that, you know what I mean? That it's like their lack of awareness about the world is not their fault at all. It's almost like a rich country shitting on a poor country. So I'm pretty sympathetic when people would be like, fucking dumb Americans. I'll be like, you're saying this, you live 20 minutes from the beach, there's not a crime in sight.
It's easy to sit back and judge when you're not living in a crime, saying fuck guns off, when you're not scared of getting shot.
Exactly. People, like that. Aussies are, and the gun thing's wild too, because, and it took me to realize this, but it's like, Aussies will be like, guns, like, they'll criticize people that own guns, and I'll be like, you're not worried that someone will kill you. You don't live around crime at all.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It's like, if a fucking single mom was to have a weapon in the house, who are you living in safest cities in the world, where even the homeless people are friendly, to say, hey, this woman shouldn't have a gun to protect her kids? You know, the reality is it's a dangerous place. So it's like, I stay out of the gun thing now, sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and do you ever feel, ever, you know, you're probably one of the best.
Well, I have a gun in the glove box for sure, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
What sort of gun do you have in the glove box?
Oh, what is it? An FN? Some sort of FN handgun. I got an AR-15 at home as well.
Oh, you need to go hunting, you know, like for deer.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And I'm a
kill 100 of them at once.
The problem is, it's like as much as people hate guns, guns are cool. Someone hands you a gun in America and you shoot it and stuff, you're going to have a good time. No matter how much you hate what it means or represents, guns are fun.
But let's be honest. Guns are designed to look cool. Guns are marketed to look cool. Hollywood has made guns fucking cool.
Instant problem solvers, huh?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it is... It's a cultural thing that's been brought, cowboys, fucking guns, you know, the whole thing. It is an amazing bit of marketing if it is. And look, you know, and America wouldn't have such issues if guns weren't doing something. whether it be positive or negative, like fucking guns are here to stay, right? But it's just, it's interesting to see, you know, like a bloke grew up in Aussie, you know, out in South Australia, gives a perspective on that we don't see, you know?
Yeah, you don't see, I mean, as well, it's like, what's going to get ratings on Australian news stations? It's going to be crazy American stories. And if it's 300 million people, it's going to be way more crazy stories, you know? But again, I just think Aussies need to realize life's way harder over there. Like, I don't imagine there's probably many places in the world where life's easier than Australia, you know? And it took me living over there to gain that perspective. That sort of changed it. And the other cultural difference that's massive is, and it makes sense. A lot of people, you know, people like Aussies and Texans are very similar. Nah. Australia and California, very similar.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
Texas is wild, crazy, rule breakers. Australia, a lot of rules. Tons of rules. Like, the crazy stuff to me is you have to wear a helmet when you ride your bicycle.
Yes, fuck.
It's like, what are you making laws to protect me from myself? My own shit? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's the contrast in culture.
Oh, because you're not killing anyone else with a motor, with a
bicycle. You know, like, Americans will be, like, happy to accept danger in their lives to avoid rules. And I feel like Australian culture is, we'll make a rule on anything to save one person. So, for classic examples, there's no red light cameras, speed cameras in Texas.
Really?
And I know there's more deaths as a result, but would I want to live with red light cameras or speed cameras? Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, I think I drank, it was Anzac Day 2 days ago. I think I ran through two red lights. And I actually
on your phone as well.
No, huh? And I was on my phone, but I was just like, fuck, on any day, double the merits, I'll be walking back to the gym, you know, like,
you'll be on a black helmet.
I'm just fucking waiting.
The cops won't pull you over in America. Like, sorry, the cops will not pull you over in Austin. I've run red lights in front of cops.
Yeah, but you're white. They're not meant to bring
but
you over.
But forget about that. Think about it. If you pull over him and he has a gun in the car, you really want to pull him over? You want to take the gamble?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 100%.
You're like, you don't commit a big crime.
They don't just get a donor. Yeah. But and back on your competition, let's go back into your team now. Nicky Rod, a few of the boys, and Ryan. You know, where are those guys heading? Are they improving? Like, mate, obviously Nicky Rod's some sort of phenomenal athlete.
Yeah,
Is his technique, you know, is he going to be a phenomenon in a few years? Because he's only young, isn't he? He's like 23.
Yeah, I think he's 26 now.
26, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how old are you now?
31.
31, yeah, right, okay. So is he improving every week? Do you, like, is there any standouts coming through there that are just some local guys walked in and going, fucking, who's this bloke?
Well, I mean, in terms of Nicky Rod, Nicky Rod's just like the only real athlete in the sport. People that move like that are doing NFL and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know? So in that sense, there's no one else like him like that. And I think if his technique matches up to his athleticism, nobody's going to be able to compete with him. You know,
yeah,
he's been on training maybe 5 years now. So it's like, and he is putting in the work. Like, you saw his EBI run where he submitted four guys with four different submissions, you know? Like, he puts in the work to try to learn technique. Because I think he hears the criticism and works hard in the opposite direction. Nicky Ryan Nicky Ryan just injured himself again. He just sent me a picture today. I better not talk about it. But Nicky's just, body's just fragile.
Yeah.
Plate of glass or something. You know what I mean? Anything.
He's not a big guy. And then I see him on your Instagram. He's always fought some massive prick. And you go, fuck, you know, he steps up. Like, so the chances are he's not like a big guy wrestling smaller guys because he's... So that might have something to do with it.
For sure, yeah. And he's a flexible guy, but he's kind of a thick guy. So I think those two things don't go together well for injuries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll do flexible things. And I think that leads you to having injuries. In terms of most potential, you guys probably know him, Joseph Chin.
Yeah,
he comes through a bit. J-Rod, I think, massive potential. J-Rod's kind of as athletic as his brother, but already probably a bit, I won't say more technical, but more technically minded. We'll sort of be able to really reconstruct moves a bit better.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because he's not as athletic. You know what I mean? Like, like he's not as thick, doesn't have as much power and strength. So I think J-Rod's probably got some of the most potential.
And do you think, you know, like UFC, because the money's there, you're getting people who could play NFL fucking doing UFC now. Like, you're getting athletes.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, for the average guy, UFC pay is still pretty average
compared to the NFL. Yeah. And basketball. And,
those guys really, really get taken care of, you know.
Plus, you want to see your head punched in when you can throw shoot baskets and do something you fucking love, you know, and actually do it. Probably you don't want to go out and punch people's heads in for like on a Saturday afternoon with your mates, so, you know, but like basketball, it's fun, right?
Yeah,
so it's probably not even anywhere near that level when you think about the athletes.
Well, they make peanuts, huh?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's Paddy Pimble was getting $20,000 6 months ago.
There's a lot of backroom deals and stuff. I'm pretty sure Paddy got $1 million from Barstool Sports for that deal. But yeah, it's hard. It's not a meritocracy. You know what I mean? It's like it doesn't matter.
It's Dana picking heads, right?
But it's also he's making a business decision. You're boring. I'm not going to invest money. That's a bad investment on paper, you know. And that guy doesn't understand that because he thinks he's in a sport. It's not a sport. Sports entertainment, you know. So it's like.
So do you reckon they look for those sort of? Because what was his name? We spoke about him before. He was the mad Trump supporter. Colby, right? He wasn't doing that a few years before that, and he put his fucking persona on. Everyone hated him. It boosted his profile massively. Who was it he was always up against?
Usman. Usman.
Yeah. Yeah, and they fucking, and he was sort of semi-racist a little bit, blah, blah, blah. But the drama was there, and I think that's what Dana's going for, you know, and that's why, obviously, Connor's such a draw card, because he's, you know, he's got the fucking...
But sometimes it's they're making a sacrifice, you know what I mean? Like, they know that what they say is going to be hated, but they give you some entertainment by giving you something to hate.
That's what I'm saying. But that's why I think, like, Rob Whittaker is a fucking nicest bloke in the world. But he didn't have that... If you went in, like, being a fucking arsehole or...
When he was in The Ultimate Fighter, he had that kind of full Reaper kind of mindset, huh? And that persona, he's, like, really tough and...
But yeah, but he's so just nice. A family man. You know, he should be rooting hookers and whatever. He'd be fucking... he'd probably get the crowd, you know?
I don't think you're obligated to do it, but you should do it. You know what I mean? If you want to make money, provide something more than the other guys provide. You know?
That's it, yeah.
So after the seminar on whatever it was, you went straight down to see Volk, is that right?
Straight down to see Volk.
Was that because of the Rodriguez fight?
Yeah, the Yair Rodriguez fight. It should be officially announced pretty soon.
Yeah. So that's totally different to Makhachev.
Oh, the opposite.
Yeah. So how do you sort of fit into the plans of someone like...
I mean, that's probably easier because Yair's got a dangerous close guard. That's sort of a game I used to play a lot when I was coming up. So it's like, it's probably an easier fight to break down. Islam's obviously got some skill set. He's got a skill set that's very hard to find in Australia. You know what I mean? Who are you going to find to replicate what Islam can do? Very tough. You'd have to find a judo guy to replicate the judo. You know what I mean? A jiu-jitsu guy is still going to be able to replicate the submissions. Jiu-jitsu submissions far superior than sambo submissions. So it's like, you could work with a jiu-jitsu guy to focus on submissions, but not transitions for MMA. But yeah, Yair's style is dangerous, but probably easier to overcome. Max Holloway out-grappled Yair.
Yeah, right, okay.
Max Holloway took him down, stacked him out, grappled him. Obviously, he looked really good against Emma and Ortega, but I don't think Holloway... is a great grappler, and if he can do it, I think that's probably not a good sign for Yair against Volks.
And you said you're training with Izzy. What's happening there?
Just going out to Auckland for a month, just training with him.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe for C's on the horizon, maybe. Obviously, if Hamzat wins, Hamzat is pretty similar, right?
Yeah. What would you do? What would your advice be to someone fighting Hamzat? Because Hamzat looks like a devil.
I mean, I think one of the biggest problems with Hamzat is he has a major pacing problem. So if you look at his match against Kevin, or his fight against Kevin Holland, you cannot do that for 5 rounds. So if he, even if he didn't submit Holland that first round, and you saw what happened with Gilbert Burns, he's going to slow down. So I think one of the biggest vulnerabilities he has is a pacing problem. So he would have to submit Izzy under two, or it's going to be terrible for him. So I think obviously if you could weather the storm, it's going to be a bad time for Hamza.
And in your... You know, this is an age-old question at UFC. But if you could build the perfect UFC fighter, would he be a wrestler as a 3-year-old up to 10, and then would he start jiu-jitsu? Or what would you have? Because what's the easier one to learn? Is it boxing? It's not really that easy, but it's probably the easier one to react to learn about combos and blah, 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 as opposed to... that natural reaction to sprawl and take it back and fucking heal, you know what I mean? What would you say are the fundamental best?
Oh, well, I think it already exists. You know, if you look at John Jones obviously had wrestling in high school, but for the most part, when he started MMA, he started MMA. You know, like he went to Jackson's and started learning everything at the same time. So that's why I think he probably combines it all better than anyone else.
And he is that NFL player. You know, he's that. He's his brothers, two brothers yeah. fucking made it. You know, he's got some sort of DNA there. And, mate, his gas is unbelievable too, like for a bigger guy. Maybe you need carbs.
He's got great pacing, though. You know what I mean? He's never chasing people. He's never running too
Nah.
His ability to control the distance is what allows him to save his energy at the right moment.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And what do you think of his submission?
Oh, that was crazy. Yeah, I actually thought Ciryl Gane was going to do a bit better, but I think obviously he didn't prepare well.
Do you reckon that was a deliberate setup, like get him against the cage so he can't get up? And it just seemed too easy a submission. He didn't even look like he had it that deep.
I think it was opportunistic, you know, like because he's hit something similar on Ryan Bader back in the day. Like he's real good at like
remember that forward. Yeah, was that Ryan Bader who choked out with the?
Was Machida.
Machida,
and against the cage as well. That one.
That was unbelievable. That.
I think Ciryl Gane just wasn't equipped, and clearly not equipped for any wrestle heavy guys at 205.
But do you reckon is there going to be a rematch of that?
Likely Jones fights Stipe and then doesn't fight again unless it's big money. Obviously everyone would love to see him fight that Pavlovich.
Yeah, 100%.
That guy's scary, yeah.
I don't think any of the heavyweights are not scary. I was particularly impressed back in the day of when Whittaker fought the Cuban.
Oh, Romero, yeah.
Romero. That was one where I thought, how can you learn wrestling that quick? Where Whittaker fucking wrestled me. Like he actually did as good as... Yeah, that was it. And he broke his thumb? Broke his thumb.
Yeah.
And if you've ever broken a thumb, mate, that is pain.
What was interesting, I first noticed it with Whittaker and Jacare. He negates a lot of the takedowns by never letting you connect your hands. Something that Leon Edwards did well against Usman. Never let you lock your hands. He might even go a two-on-one or an arm drag grip or two on the wrist. And it's so hard for wrestlers to navigate that. So rather than allowing them to lock their hands around the body or anything, just fully commit to not allowing them to lock their hands around you.
So if they're getting trying to get dumb or under and over, you just
even an arm drag grip, prevent them locking your hands, because you're committed to one side, but they can't really do much.
Yeah, right.
And that's what he did against Jacare very well. And if you rewatch Leon Edwards Usman, you'll see he's just very patiently doesn't let him lock the hands.
And when there's a UFC on, are you an avid watcher? Like, you watch every match?
I try to. I mean, there's a lot of shit matches, that I might go back and rewatch if something interesting happens.
Yeah. But I mean, and you were saying moving forward that's something that really excites you is becoming a coach. Are you a gun for hire like you are at the moment? Well, is that where you
potentially
see?
Potentially, as long as there's no conflicts of interest, you know what I mean, between MMA teams, because obviously jiu-jitsu teams are clicky, but MMA teams are it's like
cricket. I mean, fucking Australian coaches are over coaching England, rugby's fucking, who gives a fuck? It's money, and you're only given a window to make that money. If you've got to make money while the sun shines, and fuck everyone else, you know? Like, I think that you're not going to be, you know, you probably can coach into your 60s, to be honest, but you can't demonstrate it.
Yeah.
You know?
I always joke around because, I've only coached title fights. So I'm always like, no, I only coach title fights.
You know? because the money's there, right?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's financially motivated, but, to train Vox to fight Islam, that's a pretty interesting challenge.
Yeah, fucking up. Yeah, 100%.
Crack the mystique, because, again, the best grapplers, submission grapplers in the world, are not Russian. And if you submission grappling in MMA, it's beatable.
Yeah.
How did you feel at the end of the fight? Did you think Volk had it, or do you think Islam had won? What was your,
honestly,
first thought?
In the moment, the other guys in the corner going into the fifth, what did they think? They thought it was 2-2. I was worried that it was 3-1. So I was sort of, when the fight ended, I was a bit nervous, obviously hoping that home crowd would get some favoritism. But I thought no matter what happened, it would be close enough to justify a rematch. Volks could have had the rematch, but I think he would have had to wait till October.
Right.
So his plan is obviously beat Yair and still hope for that rematch.
So he'll fight Islam again, you think?
I think they'll do it. I think they'll do it. I mean, obviously, there's a lot lost between Yes and getting it done.
Yeah.
But, mate, it's one of those ones. You ask every... It's a 50-50 bet on who won. Like, every second Aussie goes, fuck, we won it, it's fucking rip-off, blah, blah, blah. So there's definitely a hunger for it. You know, it's definitely going to pull a crowd.
What did you think?
I thought he lost, to be honest. I just thought it was because we're Aussies. We supported him, but I think on a level playing field, I think he just lost. You know, and he got his back. And just because he's... I think it was just such a thing, if you understand it a little bit. Because he survived his back, like when he had his back, that's a massive thing, mate. Because if you get your back normal, you're fucked.
Mm.
So his defence was unbelievable. And I think that for everybody else who's going, fuck, how did he survive? That's a win, you know? I think... but on a level playing, I thought he lost it, to be honest. I didn't think he did enough to beat it. It was just that he was expected to get flogged.
Mm.
Let's be honest. Do you think? Like, I know you can't say that.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm biased and stuff, but yeah, I mean, it's very hard to read a fight in the moment because, especially when the crowd's going to jump on everything Volks does
and that's right.
Everything Islam does, it is, you have to watch it a few times to really understand.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. 100%.
The real moment was if he had escaped back control in the fourth round. Things could have been a lot different or prevented back control. That's the round that hurt.
If it went to round six, huh?
I mean, I honestly think the fight should be scored. Whoever's controlled the momentum at the end, you know what I mean? Like in a jiu-jitsu match, if one guy wins for 5 minutes, the other guy wins for the next five, I think it should swing harder to the guy that's winning when the fight ends or the match ends because likely...
That's kind of like a street fight with whoever's on top at the end, huh?
Well, likely the finish was coming.
Yeah.
The bell called it. But yeah, it's a terrible look for Islam. It really did a whole lot of damage to reputation, invincible sort of status, yeah.
So, what are your plans moving forward? Like, obviously you're going to coach UFC guys, but are you going to open your own gym?
I mean, honestly, I never even planned to open B-Team. It was sort of something I did to help the other guys get out of a bad situation. So, I mean, I'm not sure what future plans for. Definitely stay in Austin for a few years.
Yeah. You happy there?
I like America's better to make money. Australia's a more comfortable life.
So you'll retire. You'll finish here.
I'll likely end up back here. The tax rate in America is much nicer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Fair
point. The Aussie tax rate's too brutal, eh?
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%.
What are you going to buy with all the money you've made from the people slapping $100 at your seminars?
Oh, what am I going to buy? I don't know. Probably spend it on Gabby's OnlyFans.
Is there going to be a fight between you and Gabby eventually?
There was rumours about October, yeah, in Japan, but who knows, who knows. Talking to her, it's like...
Is that one fight you'd be nervous for? Because I would, because if you get beat, you know, that's the end of it. That's the end of everything.
Really. But imagine if she beats me, everyone would be like, oh, that's nice of Craig.
It fits your image, huh?
Yeah, no one will believe it.
Yeah, no, a nice guy. No. Mate, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be here to get you to court of law. You had the right to an attorney. Now turn around, I'm going to frisk you. Are you carrying any concealed weapons? Are you carrying... What is this?